There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way.
This is Dan.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm good.
We're still...
Hey, hey!
Hey!
Hello, Andrea. I think I got Susie on the line, too.
Yep, I'm here.
Great. Wonderful.
And Nancy's here?
I am here. You can't get rid of me.
Good. Did I hear Andrea?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we have everybody that's going to be here because Gwyneth has notified me she's a little under the weather.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Well, Rod, I expect you to take the lead.
I will take the lead. This week, as Dan noted, there's been a significant discussion on the social media email list about the fact that the nuclear industry in general doesn't advertise, and we believe that that has caused a major communications failure with the public. One of the things that I've noticed over my time is that people often will quote things that they have heard, even if they don't remember exactly where they heard it. So sometimes you need to keep repeating things so that people will hear them, even in places where they're not expecting to. So the fact that nuclear has never advertised, I think, gives us a big disadvantage when compared to our competitors who advertise constantly.
Right.
That's right.
So one of the ways we need to figure out is how do we put together enough momentum to show people with enough cash to start paying some of the bills that advertising is worthwhile. One of the challenges we have is many of the companies that make money off of nuclear are the plant operators, and they tend to believe that they don't need to advertise because people will buy their power whether they advertise or not.
Right. Yes. Most people aren't very tuned into it. It works both ways with nuclear, I think, because, and I don't know why, but there is a stigma. Let me give you an example. I read a morning email from Politico on energy every day, and the gas industry funds that. They're very upfront about that. They say it at the top of the email and at the bottom of the email. They're very upfront, and yet, being, you know, basically paid for by the gas industry, doesn't seem to taint their credibility at all. So what would happen if nuclear, for example, wanted to participate in the discourse this way by sponsoring, you know, an ongoing energy commentary? What would happen to that commentary? Well, suddenly there would be accusations that they were being bought and sold by the nuclear industry.
Right, but the response should be from the nuclear industry, so what?
Right.
Actually, there's a case study involving the Energy Collective that's fairly instructive along these lines. On March 15th, in the middle of the Fukushima crisis, we were only 4 days into it at that point. Salon, an online newspaper, ran an article accusing the Energy Collective, which is a blog aggregation site, of being a stooge, that's the term they used, for the nuclear industry because Siemens was a sponsor of the site. Now, as most of us here know, that's kind of ludicrous because Siemens has been exiting their nuclear partnership with Areva and has failed to engage fully with Ross Adam, and in any case is having second thoughts about nuclear generally because of what's going on in Germany. But this rattled the Energy Collective that their CEO wrote a major piece that they published and then widely circulated defending Siemens sponsorship. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an instructive story.
Well, and the reaction to that story reminds me of a time when I used to be an umpire at softball games, when people would accuse me of being biased because my daughters happened to be playing on the same field as I was umpiring. There was a temptation on my part to throw my bias in the complete opposite direction and call my own daughters out, even if they weren't, based
on my own
judgment.
Because of that pressure, sure.
And I believe that the people who are very skilled at fighting against nuclear have a whole list of things that they accuse people of. And how many, of course, I'm not sure how active most of you are in comment threads, but I cannot tell you how many times I have been accused of being a stooge simply because I am professionally employed by the nuclear industry now.
Yeah.
However, for the first 30 years that I, well, first 20 years that I engaged in such discussions, I was a professional naval officer, and the Navy had no desire for me to talk about nuclear energy. As a matter of fact, they discouraged me.
Right.
So that was generally my response was, hey, what, do you have a list of talking points that you're supposed to throw out there as soon as somebody, you know, it's interesting that for some reason nukes actually respond when somebody accuses them of bias or even says, well, you're just being paid to say that. And I say, well, no, I'm an engineer. They have no desire for me to be out in public. They accept the fact that I'm in public because I told them I wouldn't work for them if they didn't let me keep doing what I was doing.
Right. And think about what happened to whenever an environmentalist from the mainstream anti-nuclear environmental movement comes out in favor of nuclear, they are accused of, you know, being in the pay. It's like you cannot have a genuine conviction that nuclear can be a contributing and important source of energy without somehow being tainted.
No, without being accused of being tainted.
Exactly.
See, the thing is that there's no reason for nuclear professionals to be shy about the fact that we are, in fact, we chose the profession we're in. We're not, at least I don't think anybody in this call, is what I would consider to be a paid shill. Because,
I've been accused of that.
Yeah, but a shill is somebody who has no technical knowledge at all and will, you know, say whatever they need to say because they're being paid to say it. I mean, they're the folks that go on television, you know, because they have a pretty face or because they can hit home runs or they can dunk a basketball, and they, you know, sell shaving cream or underwear. That's a shill. You know, none of us are shills. We should be and proud of what we do.
But I think this raises an interesting question, and Susie, I'm looking to you for hopefully some answers here. And that is the intersection of pop culture and politics. There's a lot of crossover between the two. That's why movie stars do political ads, and that's why Alec Baldwin gets involved in opposing Brookhaven, or Bonnie Raitt does anti-nuclear concerts. I'm just wondering, what's been your observations there?
Well, I think, getting used to criticism is something that I think the nuclear industry has done and has gained a little bit of a thick skin at this point and is ready to put itself out there. Clean coal gets criticized every day. The natural gas ads get criticized every day. And that's not to say that they aren't still effective. Anything that this industry does has always been and will always be criticized. And I think at this point, in terms of popular culture, it's more suspect to not reach out than it is to reach out.
Oh, I agree with that wholeheartedly. If you pull yourself into a shell, You know, that's a defensive, protective position.
Punch, yeah.
Which indicates that you have something to protect or
right.
something to hide, maybe.
Right.
You know, if you're open, you know, you're out there willing to take a few jabs. And we have to understand, and this is one of the reasons why I keep emphasizing the fact that the energy business is a competitive business that's about sales and marketing and market share. You know, mm-hmm. if you don't recognize that, then you're not in the energy business. You're in some sort of, I don't know, energy research or something else. The
yeah.
business is competitive. There's
yeah.
a tremendous amount of money involved. You know, this year, it's expected that OPEC sales will exceed $1 trillion. Okay? $1 trillion. And they don't have but 30% of the oil market, which is only a portion of the energy market. Okay? So that just indicates how big the business is and how many dollars are at stake.
Well, if the business is that big, the question is, why doesn't OPEC advertise? The answer would be because they don't have to.
What do you mean? Wait, hold on a second. Who says OPEC doesn't advertise?
Well, I'm saying that I don't see the Saudi Arabian oil company running ads in the capital arena.
Do you see Citgo?
Let me finish.
Do you see Citgo advertising?
Ron, let me finish. The way, for instance, NEI ran ads in the Capital Arena with the hockey team that's in the Washington,
right.
D.C. area. And that was an example of a crossover where they tried to harness sports culture and nuclear energy. And it's a form of advertising where you hitch your market pitch to somebody else's product. For instance, that's why you see mustard and hot dog rolls in the near the hot dogs in the supermarket, for the same reason that the NFL has a very positive relationship with the United Way campaign. It's called crossover marketing. And the nuclear energy has tried this a lot.
No, hold, stop. Nuclear energy has not tried it a lot. They have spent about $3 million advertising in only the Washington, D.C. area, not over the rest of the country, not to anybody but policymakers. Yes, the Washington Capitals is a hockey team, but they only play in Washington, D.C.
I might add that I don't think that crossover advertising is effective for nuclear energy. Hot dogs and mustard have a relationship to one another. Nuclear energy doesn't really have a relationship to sports, per se.
Why do you think, Andy? Yeah, I tried that then. What was there?
Because they wanted to reach policymakers in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
But I think we need to be advertising for our own product, which is energy. I think that if we're going to have a successful ad campaign, we have to be honest about what we're advertising for.
Yeah, I agree. Particularly, here's something that has driven me crazy since I've been associated with the NEI, which has been the last 15 years now. NEI refuses to do the most effective type of advertising, which is comparison advertising. Nuclear energy is simply better than its competitors on a number of different measures.
Well, that's because it's nuclear utilities are you know, also gas and coal utilities.
That's it, exactly. Thanks, Nancy. That's an important point. They really can't.
They can't. They'd be competing with themselves.
Yeah, basically. And they're not, you know, and NEI at the end of the day is a utility-driven organization.
Right, which is why I was adamantly opposed when NEI was formed out of what was at that time three independent lobby groups,
yeah.
which had different focuses.
Yep.
NEI is dominated by utilities,
yeah.
but the utilities are only a portion of the nuclear business, and they aren't even a focused portion.
Right.
Well, what's happened is you've gotten a couple of what I call sliver organizations that have spun out. Two, for instance, are the Nuclear Fabrication Consortium and also the National Infrastructure Council, both of which pursue niche advertising on behalf of specific elements of the industry.
Tell me more about that Fabrication Council. That sounds a little like the Atomic Industrial Forum.
Well, no, actually, They spun out of the Edison Welding Institute, which is based in Columbus, Ohio, and this consortium of around 25 of the major vendors, including Areva, Westinghouse, Bechtel, and people like that, and they're focused on fabrication, pumps, pipes, parts, and trying to deal with things like end stamps, global export markets, export certification, a whole range of issues. They also support some R&D because they get some money in the area of welding. They got a couple of earmarks in appropriations in 2009-2010. I covered their conference for Fuel Cycle Week last September, and they continue to move along pretty well. The other one is Don Blees, who used to be an assistant secretary for public affairs at DOE. He's formed this Nuclear Infrastructure Council, and they are the people behind the Nuclear Town Hall media clipping service.
Okay.
They are aligned with some fairly conservative political interests, which probably started the Heritage Foundation and moved to the right. So I'm not sure how broad their appeal is going to be. They are going to run a conference in D.C. in late June, they were going to run actually last December, except that Energy Secretary Chu ran his Clean Energy Initiative conference in early December last year, so they put it off. And so you have these splinter groups. There's a couple of others that are like that, that are composed of various vendors, utilities, and so forth, that are more of a pure nuclear play. But none of them have what I would call the horsepower of NEI. And indeed, NEI's major strength is their political action committee, which hands out, I'm not sure, I think the last number I saw was around $450,000 a year. Could be different or higher or lower, I'm not sure. I don't think any of the others have a political action committee, and that, frankly, is what makes a difference in Washington. That's how you get heard.
Yeah, but Washington is not the market. Washington,
yeah.
I mean, one of the real accusations against nuclear that is tremendously effective is that it's a lackey of the government. Many people say that nuclear wouldn't exist without government subsidy, which is completely false. I mean,
what energy technology would exist without government involvement? I'd like to know.
Well, first of all, you're going to have government involvement to be able to establish the conditions that allow long-term investments.
Of course.
Because the reason Wall Street's not interested in nuclear is there's no quick payoff. I mean, I spent hours, years trying to produce a business plan that would attract investors, and every time I presented it, they were very interested in the technology, they were very interested in the potential, but as soon as I said it would take between 7 and 10 years to obtain permission to move forward, they said, we can't wait that long.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, investors need quicker returns, but that doesn't mean it's a bad investment for the country to
right.
build something that's equivalent of the Hoover Dam or all of the dams on the Columbia River.
Or TVA or whatever, yeah.
Absolutely. Because
the government didn't go to Wall Street to build the Hoover Dam. The government didn't go to Wall Street to build any of the other major infrastructure projects that went up during the New Deal, including TVA. And the thing about the United States is we have this myth that the nuclear industry should be market-driven, when in fact almost every other country on the planet has nuclear as being an energy security priority of the national government.
Yeah.
Well, but the problem with that, Dan, from a marketing point of view, is if people say it that way, there will be lots of folks who generally favor nuclear, who's, you know, like, oh, Cato, for example, will say, "Hey, if you can't make it on your own, we're not gonna do anything to help you." And as a matter of fact, Cato is so gas focused that they won't even recognize that the regulations that are associated with getting permission to build in nuclear is a huge obstacle to overcome.
Right.
Because of the time delays associated with that.
I think where you'll find some agreement is where the user pays. And the example that's coming up is the creation of FedCorp, which will be an off-the-appropriation books entity that will take over the Nuclear Waste Fund to create an interim storage site. This is what the Blue Ribbon Commission is talking about. And I think in large part there will be very little objection to this in Congress. But what it does is it creates a stable quasi-government corporation similar to TVA, which will manage the spent nuclear fuel. I've advocated for a long time that what you need is a similar government corporation to manage the construction of new nuclear power plants in terms of financing.
I think we're getting a little far from the purpose
from the,
we...
Right, okay. You are. Yeah. You're correct. But advertising would for that issue would be something that the nuclear industry would need to do. So let me recover that way.
Yeah.
Well, if I may, I'd like to hear Susie's point of view about, for example, which medium, broadcast, web, Facebook, you know, where would you start if you were going to open a campaign in favor of nuclear?
Well, I think that I would start with video and try to come up with small clips, like 60-second clips of nuclear professionals talking about their work and their life, but in a scripted way that is both honest and also addresses at least two or three key facts and has an overarching theme, for instance, waste storage or non-proliferation, or there's about a half a dozen others that are big kind of public issues.
Fantastic.
And I would really utilize traditional advertising, print ads in People magazine and billboards. And certainly we have a great network of active social media in the nuclear industry that I know would be very involved in sharing information. But I think getting people connected to those resources means really just going straight into the public realm. And NEI does a great job reaching, you know, policymakers in D.C. And ANS does an excellent job of uniting nuclear professionals and giving them a platform. But none of these organizations are in a position to take on something of this scale. And so I don't know that, you know, no matter how you feel about what exists, I think we just need to kind of have a fresh start and figure out a structure that's based on reaching specific goals rather than trying to reroute an existing organization away from its mission.
Yeah, and one of the things that I'd like to talk about is Dan talked about them as splinter groups, but I prefer to think in terms of the independent thought process and independent groups who have a real motive for growing nuclear, focused on growing nuclear as an alternative energy source. And you mentioned the fabricators, the people that go to the expense of getting their end stamps. Those people want to build nuclear stuff.
Mm-hmm.
People who sell uranium or enrichment services or fabrication for fuel want to grow that market, right?
Right.
So those are people that, or those are groups, regardless of their independent, their focus, who might be willing to sign on to pay for some of the inherent expenses of trying to put stuff into print media and billboards, etc. You can't do it for free.
No, you can't do it for free, you know, obviously.
And we all have our platforms on the web, partly because they're fairly inexpensive, but they also don't reach anybody but those who are looking for us.
Right.
So we need to have a place, like Susie mentioned, and I think, you know, with the web address on the bottom for some really good information sites. And once we get them onto the web, we can start sharing, you know, our information. But we got to tell them it's there.
I want to respond to Susie's comment about video and let a little cat out of the bag. I've been under contract by American Nuclear Society to help them build a video network. We're going to launch it in June at the National Meeting of Florida. It's going to be called either ANS TV or Fission Vision or something like that. I don't know what the name's going to be. But the objective is to have TED type quality videos within a year in a YouTube channel. Have you seen the TED videos?
Absolutely.
Yes. That is the model that ANS is looking at. We are developing the content, editorial agenda, acquiring video equipment. We're going to have a videographer at the national meeting in Florida. And we'll have the first videos up during the conference. And then thereafter, we're going to take a step back. What did we learn? What do we need to do, what will it take to really produce TED quality videos about nuclear energy, and where will the money come from, and how will we produce them? But we have launched that effort. It will take an enormous amount of work.
Tell me this, how long do you, I mean, are these videos such as Susie was talking about where you would run them on network television, or are they special segments, you know, of half hour or whatever?
Well, the TED videos typically are 15 minutes long max.
Mm-hmm. Right, but Susie's videos are 1 minute long.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it like a 1 minute or 30 seconds.
The TED videos might be one of the resources that we're advertising for. You know, that's the kind of thing that we want to get people connected to. But I would, you know, be careful with the ANS videos not to just fall into the trap of putting out more technical information and expecting the public to be able to interpret it. Because I think so many of the resources that are out there are really great, valid resources for people who have a certain amount of knowledge. But there's just nothing for people who don't have the background. And no amount of people lecturing about it is going to provide that without, you know, covering some basic information first.
Well, you're absolutely right. And the first round of videos that we're planning to do will be 3 minutes long and will be for the general public.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and that doesn't conflict or compete with what Susie's talking about. Because
no, it doesn't. It's
Susie's
just
talking
a different
about,
application.
Right. The 10, I mean, there are advertisements today that are 10 seconds long, very effective at getting people to think about something in a different way and maybe go look for a new website. But between 10 and 60 seconds is really the sweet spot for advertising.
Right.
And that's where you can, I think you can catch people when they're not really paying attention and they don't, maybe don't hear it the first time. They may not hear it the second time.
Right.
But about the third or fourth time they've heard, you know, somebody like Susie say, hey, I'm excited about being a nuclear professional because I'm producing clean energy for my children. Or, you know, I'm you know, thinking off the cuff, but there's a reason why we do what we do. And I'm sorry that Margaret couldn't be here, but, you know, she and I share, and I think, Nancy, you're probably, and Andre, I'm not trying to be insulting, but I think all of us share the fact that we're interested in energy because we've been interested in energy our entire careers, partly because of what happened in 1973 and 1979.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't understand how people can forget about those things.
It's a very big country with a lot of very different agendas, and we're just very distractible. So it's very hard to keep focused without leadership. You know, we haven't had adequate leadership on this issue.
Right. We literally don't have a long-term energy policy. I think that would be a great basis for an ad, just bringing that to the attention of the American public, that we don't actually have a plan here, and we're the only developed nation that doesn't have a plan.
Yeah.
And our fluctuations in energy price are such a direct reflection of our lack of planning. And if you don't like it, then you need to become involved in the dialogue.
Well, it's a direct reflection of allowing somebody with different motives to do the planning for us.
That's right.
I mean, I guarantee you that ExxonMobil has a plan.
Yeah.
It's marketing. Period. I mean, that's all.
ExxonMobil and Shell and Chevron all have very detailed long-term plans. They don't necessarily share them with everybody, but I guarantee you that their investors pay attention to what their long-term, long-range forecasts are and what they're doing to make their long-range forecasts come true. You know, they don't just wait for the market. They drive the market.
Yep. Yeah.
They encourage people to use natural gas, and they paint it as clean and green and any other thing that they can. And right now they paint it as cheap and abundant, even though, you know, the numbers are they're just scary. You know, I can't imagine why people get excited about a 100-year fuel supply.
Yeah.
I mean, and particularly when, if you work out the numbers, it's really 91 years. My grandmother lived to be 97 years old, and my granddaughter's only 15 months old. So I see 97 years as a very short period of time.
Interesting.
literally, that's people who are alive today may run out of gas.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
Well, I guess if we were going to, say, set a goal of developing some of these spots, where would you start?
Actually, hey, do you guys mind if it's possible that not everybody is aware of what Susie is trying to do? So, Susie, if you could give us some background on it, because I think then it'll help us define the committee to define, you know, what it's supposed to be doing, if anything.
Well, I mean, still in the very early stages of development is a project called the Energy Literacy Project, and it's basically from the listserv that we're all a part of, listening very carefully to all of the communicators in the industry, especially, you know, heightened listening since Fukushima, about what's being done, what needs to be done, what the conflicts of interest are that are keeping certain things from being done. And I'm in a good position because I have a small nonprofit that is still developing a lot of its projects. We stay very busy, but we're still young enough that we can take on new and different avenues of communicating. And this is actually something I've wanted to do for a long time, but there hasn't been a consensus in the way that there is now for the need for large-scale advertising. So, yeah, I'm just working with volunteers and my board members to come up with a proposal, basically to outline how we might be able to move forward. So how would we execute ads? How would we secure billboards? Who would we approach for funding? And those sorts of details.
Can you tell the gang a little bit about your plan? I mean, I was just looking at your draft, your extremely draft outline.
Yes.
If you can tell people about your idea about, you know, working with the university, and you have, I mean, you have a vision and it's phased. So tell people about that.
Well, so the initial phase, as I'm seeing it now, which obviously could change, would be, you know, forming a committee of volunteers who want to help out with this project, working with a major university to get interns who are capable of bringing, you know, fresh energy to this, excuse my pun, but, you know, a fresh perspective to this problem, and also the nuclear myth-busting website that we've discussed a lot as well, giving that a platform. So basically putting a few pieces in place to build this on initially. So a website that directly addresses public concerns coming from the voices of nuclear professionals. 1 to 2 page essays that are written specifically for public consumption. No technical jargon. No historical references that don't mean anything to anyone outside of the industry.
And no acronyms.
No acronyms. And, you know, just getting to the heart of the real problems that people have with nuclear energy and trying to explain why the risks are manageable and the benefits are worth it. And, you know, getting that onto a website, creating some example ads, getting a team of young people to dedicate some time to this, and just working collectively, you know, between a, you know, a university, volunteers, a committee, you know, a lot of different people would have to come together for this to work. But it should be something really dynamic that comes out of it, and really something very honest, just allowing people to respond to public fear who actually really understand the information on a personal level, because the risks that we talk about pertaining to nuclear, nobody faces those risks every day like the person walking into the reactor. You know, you want to talk about reactor safety, talk to the reactor engineer.
talk to the guy whose family lives within 10 miles of the plant.
And who works there every day, and whose pager goes off if there's a problem at 4 a.m. and he has to be there. I think that's, you know, the person we should talk to about.
I agree with that. And isn't this, you're calling it the nuclear, it's a nuclear literacy project. Is that right?
That's the working title.
Okay.
Well, you also mentioned, you mentioned it as energy literacy, which may be worth talking about, because part of the benefit that we have to help people understand is that it's not, there is no perfect energy source out there. There is no unobtainium that has no waste, no emissions, no cost, and is perfectly safe. All of the energy sources have their challenges, have their risks, but the reason we use energy is because it provides us with incalculable benefits.
Right. I mean,
energy has been an important product in human industry since man first tamed fire and yep. started running out of firewood locally and had to go walking further to get it.
Right.
You know, it is very important, and it's important to help compare and contrast and explain to people why we do what we do and why we feel very comfortable in living close to plants and operating plants. You know, for the people like me that have spent months underwater with a reactor 200 feet away, you know, there's a reason for that. It's not, and I didn't get paid danger pay. I got paid proficiency pay because I had to learn a little bit to get there. And nuclear energy is good jobs, you know. Here's something else. How can we convince nuclear professionals that it might be worth a little bit of their normal charitable giving to support Susie's nonprofit organization?
We have to have a business plan, a mission statement, and some working products. That's what we have to do. I mean, I think that Susie, what she's trying to do, you know, for example, Susie also meeting with, I'm trying to help you out here. This is what you got to do. You know, is it going to meet with the people at Clemson to get them excited about it, to either get some funding out of their nuclear engineering and environmental department, or working with them to go after funding because she knows how to write grants. I mean, I think if we can show some, you know, modest success at a very small scale, you know, like, you know, a prototype reactor, I think that nuclear professionals would get excited about it. You know, I mean, and I would hope that an organization like ANS and possibly NEI, but they're not necessarily.
I actually think ANS is probably a better organization to tap.
You know, we're not going to discriminate initially. You know, to be a backer, be a sponsor, you know, be an affiliate, be, you know, a buddy. And I think, you know, and then go out and get, you know, on the stupid federal campaign list. I mean, there's tons of things we can do. It's you know, we're not paving new ground. It's just the nuclear industry. We've never done it, you know, that's all.
Yeah.
But I like what Susie is trying to do as an initial first step. And I think that her intuition that grassroots is the way to go, she's right. She's absolutely right. You know, I'm sick of the policymakers. I'm sick of NEI, you know, and blah, you know, I'm sick of it. I think we're all sick of it. And I think we're all very frustrated. We're just regular people. You know, and this is what Americans do. This is part of the citizenship. So, you know, we should do it. And I think working with a network, assuming that Susie can get it going at Clemson, then we start reaching out to other universities with nuclear engineering and or environmental programs, and we get them involved and we get them excited. And then we need to figure out how to go from that to take it to the next level. It's almost like concentric circles is the way I'm thinking about it. That's just my vision, you know, in terms of advertising, you know, any communication, we just have to figure out the messages and match them to the medium and do it. It's not going to be hard. We just got to do it. But we're certainly not at that stage yet. I mean, you know, I can't go to any of my pals in the uranium industry unless there's a mission statement and unless there's a business plan. They're business people, otherwise, you know, and they're cynical as hell, you know. So we certainly, you know.
I know they must be cynical because they love to read your stuff.
Exactly. You know, and you know, they're not they're not opposed to, you know, getting out of their comfort zone, but they're just, you know, they're just so beaten down for obvious reasons. So I think there is a way to do it. And I think I love Susie's idea, actually, of reaching out to Clemson, not to put any pressure on you, Susie, but, you know, you know, to start there. It's very simple. It's small. It's manageable. It's achievable. We can get results, you know, in a year, and then we move forward. That's kind of what I'm thinking. That's, you know, I mean, it's a definite, you know, and this is, you know, given the nuclear horizon, you know, this is like, you know, a 7 to 15 year project, you know, it's, we got a long ways to go.
I agree. It's going to take some time, but I'm also trying to address it with some level of urgency.
Yes.
Because the world's a pretty big mess, and we don't have energy security, and the climate change freaks me out a lot, and I feel a certain level of urgency because I've realized the industry just isn't going to do it.
Oh, and the industry also, you know, I mean, our audience, our target audience has to skew younger, and I mean, everybody in the freaking nuclear industry, I mean, there are young people, but everybody's like, you know, old stupid, no offense guys, old stupid white guy, you know? It's And that doesn't help. And I also think that skewing lower to get grassroots momentum, I think that's the way to go. I mean, that's who, you know, Greenpeace, all of our opponents, you know, they're also reaching out to that same demographic. And it seems to me, and Susie obviously has a better feel for it, but they're, you know, they don't have the same baggage that everybody else has, even with Fukushima. You know, they're still going to be far more open-minded, you know, than, you know, any boomers. That's, you know, boomers are a pain in the ass. You know, they don't like nuclear at all, you know.
Hey, so, wait a minute.
I know. I'm sorry. No offense. You know, I mean, and, you know, and also, I mean, Nancy has said for years that we need a Democrat who is like a Nixon going to China. You know, if we continue to default and punt and let the Republicans run with energy policy, then we're going to get more of the same, you know, market forces, natural gas, blah, blah, blah. You know,
oil.
You know, we have to get past that. Got to move on past that.
Hey, so Susie, actually, I have a pledge. I have a pledge for you.
Yeah.
Okay, I am unable to go to the ANS meeting this June, so I'm going to calculate what I would have spent to go to that meeting and give that to you to help get started.
Yay!
Because it's no cheap endeavor to go to an ANS meeting, and I generally go on my own nickel. I've never had a company pay for me. So instead of spending that money, I will give it to you to try to get things started. And I want other people to think about what can you do personally, not who your friends are, not your rich buddies who's a business people, not people that review business plans, but people who look and say, you know, I'm tired of getting beat up, and I want my children to hear a commercial or two about what I do every day, and I'm going to help make that happen.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Rod, and I'll put that straight into our intern stipend fund so I can get some of the top kids at Clemson to come help me out and help develop this idea further and, you know, give us some of that freshness and youth that we're trying to achieve and the audience that we really need to reach. I think it makes sense to work directly with those people. And
so, Susie, are we like a committee? Are we like some advisory board to your nonprofit? Do we need a charter? What would you like? Because I'll write a charter right now. That's pretty easy.
If you want to write a charter, that would be great because I have a meeting Tuesday with my board.
Okay.
And I have a list of people I would like to include on a committee, and I'm just going to run it by my board members. We tend to generally always be pretty much on the same page.
Okay.
And just make sure that they check off everything. In fact, yeah, Rod, if you want to wait until Wednesday before you air this, please.
No problem.
Actually, Susie, can you share? I mean, it's possible that Dan and Nancy, and I don't remember who everybody on your board is, but why don't you tell them who is a member of your board?
Oh, Jim Malone, Steve Shutt, Meredith Engwin, and Carl Luma.
Whoa.
I know. It's very
nice.
Yeah.
I got some good people, some really good people. Well, Steve Shutt was, he's played a pretty major role.
And I think we all know Jim, too.
Yeah, and my dad's an unofficial board member because legally he's not allowed to be on my board because he's a family member.
So it's unofficial and he doesn't do any, doesn't have any vote.
Yes, he just, tells me what he thinks and I usually disregard it.
Well, as my daughters do to me. They ask for my advice and they blithely do exactly what they want to do anyway, so.
Yeah. At least they ask.
Well, that's true. I do have a decent relationship with my girls. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
My kids don't ask. Count your blessings.
I do. I count them all the time. Okay,
Susan,
are you also meeting INL? Isn't that what you said, the INL people?
Well, I'm going out there for User Week to give a talk, which it's unrelated to this, but I am going to try to sit down and talk with their communications people.
I don't know what is User Week.
User Week, because INL is a federal, national lab. All of the test facilities at the Advanced Test Reactor belong to the American public, and so anyone can submit a proposal to INL to do research there. And if it's good enough to be accepted, you get to go out there for free and conduct your research. So User Week is basically all of those amazing, wonderful people who've had their proposals accepted and are doing research or have done research or trying to do research at the Advanced Test Reactor get together for a week for a conference. And so I'm going to be speaking at dinner on Wednesday to a bunch of super fancy, smart people. It's a little intimidating.
Good. Excellent.
Wow.
Hey, here's a hint for you, Susie. If you tell them they're all super fancy, smart people, they'll love you forever.
Yeah.
Hey, Susie, you're going to enjoy it. I was a luncheon speaker for User Week 2 years ago.
Oh, great.
Honored to be speaking to such smart people.
Actually, it's very informal. They served hot dogs and burgers, and Todd Allen from University of Wisconsin runs it. He's a terrific guy. There's a lot of young people there. They will just, I think, absolutely enjoy, hearing from you, and I think you'll have a great time. By the way, the VP for communications at the INL is Amy Lintz, and she is on our social media list. By the way, the Idaho National Lab sponsored our social media meetup at last year's ANS conference. They did it exclusively. So you're going to be in a very supportive environment there.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dan. Yeah, I actually went out there not for User Week, but I went out last year just as a speaker. And so I got to meet Amy and Todd and a few of these people. And so I'm looking forward to, getting back out there and continuing to build relationships with INL because they are pretty fabulous.
And when are you meeting with Clemson?
Well, I don't have a formal meeting. I have a contact list, and I've got a couple of emails in. And so I'm trying to figure out if the best way is to connect with the program specifically first and let them have some input on how we conduct the internship, or if I should just get on their internship board and post a few openings and see who applies. So I'm still, like I said, I've got to talk to my board and figure out the best way.
I think you should do both, and if anybody knows any Clemson alumni, anyone who graduated.
Good idea.
Yeah, anybody who graduated from the program or who's got, and there's got to be, not that we don't necessarily want to get utilities involved, but certainly, I find it hard to believe that SCANA and Duke and Progress don't have their fingers all over whatever it is that Clemson is doing nuclear-wise. So there are ways to get you to the right person or the right people there and get them excited about it.
Right. And I was just at McGuire last week and met with their communications department, and I should probably follow up with them and just inquire if they know anyone at Clemson as well.
Yeah. I mean, if you can, I'm sure if you could get to the right person, they would jump all over this,
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to be fully prepared for that. I want to make sure all of my ducks are in a row.
Sure. sure. Okay. All right, so you're still trying to set that up. Okay. I'm perfectly happy to, write a charter for, I'm going to just call it nuclear literacy.
Okay.
Because I like it. And I know, and I agree, Rod, it is in the context of overall energy literacy, and to the extent that we can present nuclear within that context, that's great. But I really think, we need to be unabashedly, pro-nuclear, loving it, not ashamed. Here it is.
Yep, I agree with that.
Here's why it's important. And, we love nuclear. So warts and all, here it is. So I really like nuclear literacy, the nuclear literacy project.
I agree. Yeah. It's
a great idea.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, that's Susie also came up with that. She's got ideas. This one,
like I said, it's just been the result of listening to all of these, lifelong communicators in the industry go back and forth and trying to figure out where the gaps are. So, really, thank you guys for sharing your, wisdom and knowledge with me and letting me just kind of listen in.
Hey, I'll share my passion with you. I have no wisdom.
Well, passion too. That's important too.
Right. Okay.
That works. Yeah, okay. Sure, of course.
All right. I'm happy to take a stab at this, or maybe just some bullet points. You're meeting with your board on Tuesday, did you say?
Yes, Tuesday at 2:00 Eastern.
Okay.
Very good.
I'll just crank something out. I don't know how chartery it'll be, but I kind of have I have a vision of it, but I'm sure lots of people have thoughts about. And you do, ultimately it's your gig. It's your thing.
Well, I don't see it that way. I feel like it's more trying to actualize the ideas that collectively we haven't been able to. And I just happen to be in a good position with this organization where we're still flexible enough that we can take on a project like this without undermining our existing projects.
Hey, Susie, have you ever talked to any radio stations or television stations about their what is it they do when they run PSAs? Is that the right
exactly? Name? Yes,
I have done quite a bit of research on that actually, and the way it works is basically.
I'm sorry, public service announcements. I got to get rid of the acronym stuff.
Right. Public service announcements. What happens is, when a radio station or a TV station doesn't have specific paid advertising in a time slot, if they just have a gap in advertising, they have a pile of PSAs at all times that all kinds of organizations submit, and they'll just run one whenever they have a gap. And so I think public service announcements are a really great venue for certain parts of this project, but I also think we need to seriously consider paid advertising as well. I think being in control of when and where things run is pretty important.
Yep, absolutely. And one of the reasons that I'm such an advocate of advertising is that whole idea of control. When you're paying for it, you get to say what you need to say, and you get to say it in the way you need to say it. You don't get filtered by anybody else. And as long as you're being straightforward and honest, hey, you're going to be above 90% of the folks that advertise.
Right. Well, and the great thing about nuclear is we can just be honest about it. It's okay. We can just tell the truth. And
it really is pretty fascinating. You hold up a fuel pellet and say, this is a ton of coal. That's incredible.
Well, yeah, there's so much we can do. We can take people, we can show uranium mines. Here it is. Here's what happens. We can do, there's so much. Watching spent fuel being loaded and you're in the pool and you don't get zapped with any extra radiation. There's so much that we can do just to show people because we know for firsthand, and actually, Rod, I think your experience is in the nuclear Navy, that's almost better than anybody's because, as you said, you lived 18 months underwater, 200, what did you say, meters or feet?
200 feet.
From a freaking reactor, and you're fine. Well, you're not fine, but in a different way. That's you up in other ways. That had nothing to do with radiation.
Hey, there's
cool.
A lot to be said for the kookiness that happens, but... That's not because of radiation.
Yes. To me, that is like education gold right there. Absolutely. And they're just stories that need to be told in a consistent manner, you know, high quality and just done.
Right, and good editing and music and getting the timing yep. right and the intros and all of those little artistic details.
Yes.
All
yeah.
the videos I see all over the place for nuclear, it just makes me crazy because
yeah.
they're just so poorly done. And
yeah,
they're like super
it.
Close up on someone's face, or they're, you know, stationary cameras and it's a talk. And it's like just there's nothing engaging happening.
I mean, like those NEI videos. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that because I have good friends at NEI. But
sure.
Well, not that those don't have a place, but those aren't effective outreach materials. Those
right.
are great for people in the industry trying to keep up with their own knowledge and research, but those are not good outreach materials.
I mean,
right.
they don't make eye contact with a camera.
Right. Well, this is what happens when engineers sort of, you know, engineers can't drive this. You know, they have to actually let the communications people, you know, steer the ship. And that's hard for engineers. I run up against that. I have a client, an engineering company, and they tell me how to do it. And I think to myself, you guys are nuts. You don't know anything about it. You know, why don't you let me do that for you since you're paying me? But that's another. But, you know, I think that's certainly a part of the problem, too, is it's not the right people in the communications industry, you know, helping.
Speaking of which, Susie, yeah. does Clemson have a film program?
I believe they do. And that's, you know, what I really want to do is get a film student, get an education student, get an environmental science student, and put them all in a room together and say, what do you know about nuclear energy? And get them to talk it out and go through the experience of how difficult it is to communicate about it and, you know, facilitate research and help them work together to come up with creative solutions and add to this effort in some way.
That's great.
It's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. I think we need a lot of outside perspective right now. We're just an isolated bunch, and it's not working for us, and
yep.
it's got to change.
Right.
We got to stop talking to just each other.
I agree.
I'll understand. Yeah.
I like you guys a lot, though, but also I think we should, in addition, talk to lots of other people.
Well, and I think at the end of the day, the moral of the story, or, you know, lessons learned, since the nuclear industry likes that so much, is, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result, period. So since what we've done in the past clearly doesn't work, we should try something else. And, you know, everything is on the table. You know, we can only improve from here, even if we make missteps, and we will, you know.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I really, along those lines, is we also, as people who love lessons learned, should look for best practices and look for places that have succeeded. And quite honestly, one of the places we should be able to look for that is the people that have been fighting nuclear for so long with great effect.
Yes.
Take some of their techniques and turn them backwards.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. And you know, the discussion at the beginning of the conference call was, you know, the idea of being a paid shill and that you'd only be pro-nuclear if you were getting paid. And so that suggests to me, well, then you're only anti-nuclear because you're being paid. Is that correct? And we can go right from there. And I also think, too, you know, in terms of, you know, being
yes.
you know, there's, you know, there's no, that we need a variety of messages and a variety of different ways and people to communicate them. You know, not, you know, some people can be nice and other people can be obnoxious, or, you know, one, you know, because everything works, and different communication styles are going to work with different members of our target audience.
I think,
you know?
I think, Andrea, you and I should be on the same obnoxious team.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But one thing I want to point out, I think we need to take a lot of different venues, but
yeah.
did everyone get that email from Margaret about the failings of social media? And
yes.
I don't know. It was pretty poignant. But basically that all of these tools don't mean anything if you don't have a good message.
Right.
And so I think that that's the first thing is, you know, figuring out a really solid message and then allowing a whole lot of different ideas to emerge from that, but that still have some sort of consistent umbrella theme that holds them all together. And like you said, looking at our enemies, or not our enemies, but our opponents, isn't necessarily a bad thing. Because if you look at the structure of the Clean Coal campaign, just as an organization, it's really smartly done, and they've been able to do a lot of outreach and a lot of advertising, and it's funded by a lot of different people, and they have really great communications people working on it around the clock. And it's a good model for how something like this could work.
We are the people of the nuclear industry.
Yeah.
That's one of the similar ones, is the people of America's oil and gas industry.
Right.
Focus of, okay, folks, you know, there are people who operate these plants. Most of them are actually pretty smart and probably could get a job in just about any thing that they set their mind to, but they've chosen to do this. Mm-hmm. Help them understand why we've chosen to do what we do.
I think you nailed it. That's exactly right.
All right, folks. My clock is just about an hour. It's wonderful talking with all of you as usual. And I do want to do something I should have done at the very beginning. This is the Atomic Show, and it is my pleasure to have with me today Susie Hobbs, Nancy Roth, Andrea Janetta, and Dan Yerman. So if you all could say hello in your own voice. So at the final end here, people can match up the voice to the name.
Susie. Hi, this is Susie.
This is Nancy.
This is Andrea.
And this is Dan.
All right, great. Hey, thank you all very much. And
thank you,
and
Ross.
Susie, I'm serious, so let me do the math, and I'll figure out what it would have cost me, and the check will be in the mail, but I really mean that. It's not an empty promise.
Thanks, Rod. We will put it to good use. I promise you that.
All right.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
Talk to you guys. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, so there you have it. A lot of us think that the nuclear energy technology itself needs some advertising. And who better to support advertising for nuclear technology than people who believe in it enough to actually dedicate their careers to it, people who have chosen that this is the way that they are going to contribute to the world, is to make nuclear technology work. I know it's great to spend time on the internet, get involved in discussions, and maybe even blog and put some effort into it yourself. That takes a lot of time and is very important. But every once in a while, I will ask you all to reach into your pockets, to pull out some money and donate that, dedicate that to following through on your passion for nuclear energy. So if you can, please go to Pop Atomic Studios and find their donate button. Give them a donation to get the atomic advertising effort going. Susie Hobbs is a terrific lady. It's a well-organized nonprofit. They're excited. They're young. They're energetic. Let's give them some support. Let's make it so that they can, in fact, produce some tremendous, short, to-the-point vignettes that help us, the nuclear professionals, tell the world why we do what we do. And maybe we can stop a few journalists from bashing what they don't understand, and come to us and ask us for more information. Ask us why it is that we think that emission-free, compact, dense, reliable nuclear energy is something that really is a great benefit to the world. So, I hope you enjoyed the show. Keep listening. Bye for now. This is Rod signing off.